by Judicial Decree 10, A Case of Libel, written by Commander James Bondage, narrated by Nigel Moore. Preface. It is only by an accident of history that we no longer follow the ancient Roman custom of judicial enslavement by reason of debt. What if history had taken a different path? Modern physical theory teaches that there are an infinite number of universes, some very much like our own, and others so different as to be almost incomprehensible. Therefore, there must exist worlds similar to ours, where this ancient Roman law is still in force. This story takes place in one of those worlds. Chapter 1. Through the Keyhole. Clara Agnerson was born in a small town near the Vinland WP border, dead center in the middle of nowhere. After she reached the age of 9, not a single day of her childhood or adolescence passed when she did not long to depart her dull fishing village home on Great Thor Lake for some more interesting place, such as anywhere else. Each day the town, her parents, her friends, their parents, and all the rest of the contented, bovine residents of Haraldsburg seemed duller and more stifling than the day before, until by the time she was 16, she thought she would suffocate if she did not do something. So she packed a bag, withdrew all the money she had saved from working in the salmon cannery during the all-too-brief northern summers, bought a one-way bus ticket to civilization, and left Olafsburg with nary a backward glance. This background may explain why Clara was so driven to become a success, whenever she considered the possibility of failing and being forced to slink back to her old hometown, tail tucked between her legs, she redoubled her efforts. After she landed her first real job, not counting the waitressing, bartending, and clerking she did at first, just to keep body and soul together, as the obituary writer for the Morning Posthorn, a small daily newspaper in the city of Kingsport, she spent the first few months looking around for the fastest way to the top of the business. She soon discovered that good reporters were a dime a dozen, and that investigative and writing skills, however excellent, did not by themselves open a fast road to success. You also needed some luck. She met some excellent reporters who had waited years to get the big story they needed to make their names, and others who never did get that story, and were consequently doomed to lives of obscurity. She had no intention of leaving her future to something as unreliable as luck. But there was a surer way, she soon realized. The public's appetite for gossip, scandal, and dirt of all kinds appeared to be virtually unlimited, especially if the gossip was about celebrities, aristocrats, or the wealthy, or better yet, all three at once. Provided only that one knew her way around the rather liberal defamation laws of the WP, gossip was the perfect vehicle for a quick ride to the top of the journalism game. Clara was in a hurry, but she was never hasty. She bided her time, writing obituaries and the occasional human interest article to sharpen her skills, while studying the law of defamation with care. She studied the public's taste at the same time, learning what kinds of scandals involving what sort of participants would create the greatest stir. When she was finally ready to make her move, she arranged to meet Oleg Albertson, publisher of the Morning Posthorn, at a New Year's party. And almost before the old boy knew what was happening, they were having an affair. The seduction of Albertson was simplicity itself for Clara, for she had the kind of face and body that turned the brains of otherwise intelligent men into something resembling thin porridge. Clara was fully prepared to blackmail her boss to get what she wanted, by threatening to reveal the affair to his wife of 40 years. This turned out not to be necessary. When she asked Albertson for a twice-a-week gossip column of her own, he gave it to her without argument. Her new column, Through the Keyhole, was an immediate success because of her careful preparation. The day after she met Albertson, and even before she had seduced him, Clara had begun to set up a network of sources which would give her a great advantage over rival rumor mongers. These sources were servants, both slave and free, employed in the upper-class households of the future subjects of her columns, to whom she paid a crown for every item she was able to use in her column. Clara's reporting on the indiscretions, real and imagined, of high society in Kingsport found a public who had evidently been starving for stories of drunken bluebloods engaging in fistfights at charity balls, rumors about prominent aristocratic matrons being caught in bed with well-endowed stable boys, and similar important issues of public interest. With the aid of her sources and a judicious mixture of innuendo, initials, nicknames, and other devices to provide the necessary legal fig leaf to avoid lawsuits, Clara was able to provide her readers with daily tales of the sexual misdeeds and illegal or immoral conduct involving at least one member of every leading family in Kingsport in the first year of her column's publication. Not to be sure that these stories were always or even usually true.